Flight attendants, please prepare for takeoff.
Stolen by Ehlers to Wheeler. Back to Ehlers. Scores!
Kyle Connor has the Midas touch right now.
And another outstanding stop by Connor Hellebuck.
Check the shoot. Score! Oh, what a slick move by Mark Scheifele.
Ground Control, the official podcast of the Winnipeg Jets. Hosted by Jets TV.
Episode number 98 here on Ground Control, the official podcast of the Winnipeg Jets, joined by Jets TV's Mitchell Clinton and 680 CJOB's Jamie Thomas. Gentlemen, 5 out of 6 points in Toronto. Could it have been a better road trip? Well, I'm sure, of course, you could have got 10 out of 10, but 7 out of 10 points on the trip. A great way to continue the season for the Winnipeg Jets. Mitch, just recap the road trip for us, and what did you like about what the Jets were able to do?
I mean, the road trip itself, it's interesting because, yeah, you finish with 5 out of 6 points and you're on top of the world, especially given how you played against against the Maple Leafs and the road trip finale. But you go back like a week ago and it was like, oh, man, the Jets just lost 7-1 to Montreal. Everything that could go wrong did go wrong in that game. But, you know, after the game, I remember Paul Maurice saying, you know what, we're treating this one as an outlier, and that's just the way it is. And ultimately, you look at the course of the road trip, that's how it ended up being. To the team's credit, they, you know, came back and, you know, had some great performances from Connor Hellebuck in the first couple of games against the Maple Leafs to get 3 of 4 points in that situation. But I thought what was interesting was Paul Maurice saying after the road trip was done that that 7-1 loss, like, it kind of put a little bit, not doubt, but it definitely shook the confidence of the team in their style of play. And that's not something that you want lingering around very often. So it took them a little bit to kind of consistently grow back to a confident level in their game. And then you have the 5-2 win over Toronto, which, you know, they're not calling a statement game, but I think in the room, without actually being in the room, I would say it's a statement to their own dressing room just to show that, listen, like, we know we're a good team, but man, like, when we put it all together, this is what it looks like, and this is what we're able to do. So I think as much as, you know, 7 out of 10 points is great and 5 out of 6 points from the Maple Leafs is great, I think what it did for the room at the end of that road trip is just as important.
Yeah, you kind of talk about how they were able to park that 7-1 loss. And just as someone who was on the road trip, I've never... You know, we haven't had many 7-1 losses with the Winnipeg Jets since the time that I've been around. And, you know, they lose 7-1 and it's obviously disappointing, but, like, you know, the plane ride to Toronto was not that of a 7-1 loss. The next day was an off day in Toronto. There was a team dinner. There was a lot of bonding going on team dinner, obviously in the hotel, all COVID friendly and whatnot, but it just seemed like they didn't care, you know, like they knew that that wasn't who they were. And then they moved on. So obviously 5 of 6, like you mentioned, from Toronto, and clearly they proved it to themselves and to everybody else. Jamie, a lot of the questions after the game on Saturday night in Toronto were, you know, is this a measuring stick? You know, do you think you planted a seed of doubt in Toronto? And, you know, do you buy into that? I mean, the players, they didn't seem to, and I think they're probably right. I mean, you still have a bunch of games against Toronto, and if you lose the rest of them, well, clearly you're not feeling so good heading into a potential playoff series with them. But what does it mean to take 5 of 6 from the Toronto Maple Leafs, who at this point lead the division?
I think from the outside looking in, you had all those questions coming in for the Jets to defend the slots. And then even going back a little bit further, back to that 7-1 loss, Paul Maurice admitted, you know, the defensive structure, defensive play in the 3 previous games before Saturday wasn't where the Jets wanted to be. So I wouldn't say it's a measuring stick. I just think you're telling everybody else you're just as good, if not better, than the Toronto Maple Leafs. Just, the Jets don't need games to tell them how good they are. They just need events to prove to themselves that they're as good as they think they are. And for them to only give up 21 shots, and anytime Toronto tried those slot passes, there were sticks there, there were bodies there, there was shots being blocked. Everything that Toronto had done the previous 2 games, the Jets took away from them. So you, as Mitch and you touched on, just they can play that well. And they are a good defensive team, just got away from it a little bit for the previous 3 games. So there's still 6 more meetings with the Leafs. I don't think there's any type of message sending when you play everybody so many times in this compressed schedule. But man, it sure had to feel good at the end of the tunnel after a long road trip and not getting out a whole lot and being stuck in your hotel room to finish things off that way is great. for the soul and on the trip back, I imagine.
Yeah, a quick pit stop back in Winnipeg here, and then the Winnipeg Jets are back on the road right away. So I'll be doing a lot of laundry over the next 24 hours. Mitchell, the third line, you know, they've had a lot of success. You know, you talked about it in your three takeaways piece after the game on Saturday. Mason Appleton with a couple of goals and some assists as well. Adam Lowry gets the game-winning goal on Saturday night. What has that third line been able to do this season that's allowed them to be successful and give the Jets that depth that they covet so often?
They were, they were so good in that finale against Toronto. And when you dive into it, Natural Stat Trick had them actually behind in terms of scoring chances at 5-on-5, 6-4. But dive a little deeper, if you will, into the high danger chances, the ones that the Jets want to reduce. And that Lowry line had 4 high danger chances and none against, which is real important. So whatever those scoring chances were that they gave up, they're not the high percentage ones. And you'll give those up all day because you know you have Lauren Brossoit and Connor Hellebuck behind you. Lowry's line obviously has been, you know, used to that checking line role against one of the opposition's best lines for a few seasons now. But over the last few games, I think you've started to see them come together, especially because Andrew Copp spent a fair bit of this season in the top 6. So he wasn't on that line with that Appleton-Lowry duo, which had been really good possession-wise for the majority of the season. So I think you're starting to see them come together. So when you put those three players on the same line, you have Mason Appleton's speed and net drive capabilities, which, I mean, I don't know if you guys saw some of the comparisons on social media, but the goal that he scored in the first game against Toronto, people were comparing it to a young Blake Wheeler kind of taking that turn and cutting in front of the goaltender and tucking it in, which Wheeler almost did a couple nights later against Toronto once again. So you have that ability of Mason Appleton. You got the face-off prowess of Copp and Lowry, the defensive awareness that they all bring. And then on top of that, they're starting to gain some traction offensively. That was a real nifty pass from Appleton out front to Lowry. And then for Lowry to be able to corral it off the skate to the backhand and then tuck it in quickly just before he was able to get checked. I mean, this is a group that's starting to feel it a little bit. So you have a line that's going to do so much more for you than just hold water or be even. They're a group that can actually contribute at the other end of the ice as well as do what they do defensively.
You talk about people feeling it. Paul Stastny right now, dude is feeling it. He's got a bunch of goals on the road trip. Things are clicking for him. He had the OT winner a while back against Montreal. Jamie, I think we sort of saw everything come together for him and Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele in that series finale against the Leafs. You know, they spent a ton of time in the offensive zone, but I want to key in a little bit on Paul Stastny and Blake Wheeler. What have those two been able to do with each other that has just created a great chemistry? Obviously we all know the story off the ice. So they're good buddies. You know, they're similar age, both have kids. They played together in Germany, but what's allowed them to have the success that we're seeing?
Well, first off, Paul Maurice has said that the guy that's in between Wheeler and Stastny and Mark Scheifele is like a chameleon. So that's why Paul Maurice has always been glad to put Blake Wheeler with Mark Scheifele, because Mark gets all that hard work, the never ending, you know, the part that off the ice where he's taking care of his body that way, that they kind of learned that from Blake Wheeler. And then with Paul Stastny, it's almost seemed like Paul Stastny's face-off prowess is kind of worn off on Mark Scheifele, because Scheifele, who struggled mightily for this road trip to start it in the faceoff dot, takes that late faceoff in the game that they win on Tuesday, but they hold on to that one. And then he goes, he's over 50% on Thursday and again over 50% on Saturday. So that faceoff ability from Paul Stastny has rubbed off on Mark Scheifele, and almost that mentor. There's two mentors on both sides of Mark Scheifele, and just the chemistry that Blake Wheeler and Paul Stastny have in the top line has been something to watch. Now, them going head-to-head with the Austin Matthews line on Saturday night, they shut them down as well. And then, of course, Mark Scheifele gets a timely power play goal. So you just can't put into words how important Paul Stastny is in that dressing room. Same thing, Blake Wheeler, happy to have someone of his age and ilk on the team as well, plays a big role in it as well. Because, you know, Paul Maurice has talked about the veteran presence in the room. You have those guys that all have kids. Y'all have something to talk about instead of a younger room, which the Jets have had for such a long time. So there's just so many ways you can say how Blake Wheeler and Paul Stastny help out on and off the ice. It's been fun to watch.
We'll slide over to our guest this week, which is TSN's Sarah Orleski. Mitch, you sat down with her via Zoom and had a good chat. I'll let you intro her.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the National Hockey League has a focus on gender equality this month. Obviously, International Women's Day was back on March 8th. And what a lot of people, I think, might have forgotten is Sarah Leske was part of that kind of the last ceremonial puck drop that was had at Bell MTS Place before the season shut down. And it was for this a similar reason. So we dove into a little bit of that and then just kind of what she's seeing from her perspective of the industry that she works in and sports in general, and kind of how she, her mentors when she was growing up and what it's like to be a role model. So personally, of course, I did the interview, so I think it's fantastic, but we'll let you all be the judge of that.
Hi, this is Mark Scheifele, and you're listening to Ground Control, the official podcast of the Winnipeg Jets.
Pleased to be joined by TSN's Sarah Orleski, who almost needs no introduction in these parts, let's be honest. But this is an audio podcast, so I do have to introduce you a little bit, Sarah.
Well, absolutely. Although we could see whether or not people, I could just be that mystery. It could be like the Masked Singer. Mm-hmm. We could just see whether or not people could recognize my voice.
It's a solid reference.
Well,
first off, I mean, the players have been asked about it. Paul Maurice has been asked about it. I'm curious from your perspective, what has this season been like as someone who hosts broadcasts? For people that are unaware, both of us are in the Bud King Club. We have what we call dueling desks. Yours is a little bit higher than mine. I'm willing to acknowledge that fully. But what's it kind of been like for you, maybe for both the home games and you're also there for away games?
Yeah, well, first off, my desk had to be a little bit higher, the platform that it's on, because you're taller than I am. And so I wasn't able to concede that. So I needed us to be on equal level. You know what? It's been incredibly bizarre, and I haven't gotten used to the fact that there are no fans around. So when you start with home games, when you're beside me and we have our dueling desks, so at least there's obviously there isn't the atmosphere, as much as they do a great job of trying to pump in the artificial crowd noise. It's just not anywhere close to being the same, but at least you're able to watch the game in front of you. And there are people in the building, other reporters and different people from True North. Away games, man, are very different and very lonely. So typically the away games, when you walk in, so Dennis and Kevin call the game from up in their booth, and it is so quiet that you can pretty much hear a pin drop. So when I'm sitting at my desk in the Bud Lounge, I can hear Dennis calling the game from up in the booth because there is no other ambient noise to interfere with it. So you can hear everything. I joke that sometimes that I need to be quiet when having conversations with the cameraman or the audio technician that I have with me, just because I'm always afraid that they're going to be able to pick it up if we get too excited, because you can hear everything so well. But there's only a couple of us. There's three of us that are in on road games, and then Dennis and Kevin upstairs. So it's okay on the early games, different, but okay if they're out east and you've got a 6 o'clock start. But let me tell you, when they play in the Pacific time zone, it is a tough sell at 9 o'clock at night to be able to kind of manufacture some of that energy. So I have been known to have a coffee at 10:30. At night, just to try to keep myself awake, because I am one of those ones, Mitch, that love to go to sleep early. So the late starts are a tough one for me.
Yeah, no, I'm the exact same, especially during the week. My wife often makes fun of me that I'm going to bed at it gets to like 9:30 at night. I'm like looking at my watch. I'm like, you know, I could really. And then, you know, the Jets will, like, the next road trip that they'll go on, they'll have some 9:30 starts. And you're right, the late night coffee tends to help with that.
Absolutely. It's a necessity. So I fuel up. I always usually have, I measure my days in coffee. That's usually how many lattes I feel like I need to have in order to try to stay awake. But when they go out, I said, to the Pacific division, those ones are tough. So mm-hmm. I've got to try to, you know, hit my face a few times, that sort of thing. Try to wake myself, perk myself up, squeeze my cheeks to try to bring some color back into them. And look awake and engaged.
I've done that before.
We're giving away all of our secrets.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So International Women's Day was back on March 8th. It's a day you know, if you look up the exact messaging for the day, it's a day that celebrates, you know, the social, economic, cultural, and political achievements of women. But it's also a focal point to kind of bring attention to issues such as gender equality, which is something the National Hockey League also focuses on in March. So I suppose it's a broad question, but as someone who has been in the sports journalism space for a while, have you seen improvement in equality in that area of the profession, fully acknowledging that there's still some work to be done?
Yeah, I think that certainly there are more women in the business now and in a variety of different roles than when I started. I had my first job in 2003, I believe. 2002 might have been when I started on air, but so it was very different back then. And I actually was put on the air. I, it was what I always wanted to do, but I was given the opportunity because at the time it was just a novelty to have a woman doing sports. And so they thought that it would be a good idea to try for it, pretty much. But that was the route that things were going. Let's just give this a shot. This is new and different. But there weren't many of us. I mean, I covered the Vancouver Canucks for a number of years when I started my career, and there was really, there was one other woman that worked in sports, and you didn't see her around the Canucks that often. And that was pretty much it. So to be able to see the advancements for it, there is such a long way to go, I think, still in perception, everything. But you look at the fact that we now see in broadcasting, you don't just see the typical, what had been typical roles of whether it be a sideline reporter or an anchor, but you see women being used in play-by-play roles or as analysts. And I think that the perception is changing, but we still have a long way to go. And I look forward to the day when it isn't something that draws attention and that isn't as noteworthy, because it just happens and it just happens regularly, and it's just the best person for the job.
And you mentioned, you know, you're seeing people not only women, not only as, you know, sideline reporters or ringside reporters, if you will, but also as analysts. We had for a different version of, I guess you could say, equality, we had Harna Ryan Singh on the show or on the podcast a little while ago, and he spoke about the importance of having someone to look up to, whether it's somebody that looks like you or just having a role model. I remember a couple of years around Halloween, I think it was, you had put some photos up on social media of girls dressing up as you. What was that kind of feel like? And how does it, I guess, feel in some way to be a little bit of a role model for young girls coming up?
Yeah, it's, you know, it was something that growing up, I never really thought much about the representation angle of it. And early on in my career, there were women that I looked up to, and they were generally south of the border. I grew up when Hannah Storm did the NBA on NBC, and I loved watching her host there. But I had a number of great role models and people that took me under their wing that were men. And they were just wonderful to me and treated me as an equal. And so I never thought about it until recently, in more recent years. Seeing little girls dress up as me is unbelievably flattering. I had someone the other day actually tweet on International Women's Day about how she grew up. The first person that she remembers watching sports was when I was working at The Score, and she would watch me. She was in elementary school, which I could have done without the elementary school comment. I'm not going to lie. I actually messaged her. She works for the OHL right now. And I messaged her and said, I was very flattered for it. But again, maybe we could leave out the elementary aspect. I like to think that I'm not that old, that somebody could have been watching me back then and, you know, and now into the career themselves. But I think it does mean a lot. And I have a young daughter, and I know that from the time she was in kindergarten, little girls would walk out of her class and say, I saw you on TV yesterday. And it really hammered home for me the importance of it, because I think it is so key for, especially in roles that maybe you wouldn't necessarily think of, to be able to, and that extends obviously far beyond sports, to be able to see women take on sometimes what would be deemed to be non-traditional roles or non-traditional career paths, to be able to see it. And just, even if you don't want to do it, just to know that that option is there and it's mm-hmm. a possibility. And I'm a big believer in dreaming big. And when you see somebody able to achieve something like that, I think that it hammers home the benefits of that and just how important it is to be able to think that you can do anything. My mom used to say to me, she's huge, my parents were huge supporters of mine, but growing up, and my mom, when I said I wanted to be a sports broadcaster, she said, well, there aren't a lot of them, which, I mean, there were a lot more then than there are now. It's such, sadly, you know, in traditional media has changed obviously so much mm-hmm. over the years, but I was always believer of, well, why not me? Someone's going to do that role. So why wouldn't it be me? And I think just seeing women do the roles now hopefully is inspiring a new generation to have that, why not me? And that belief that they can do it.
It's really well said.
It was just a really long answer, Mitch. You don't have to.
It's brilliant. It's really good. That's the glory of podcasts, right? I don't have to cut that down to a 12-second clip, right? It's hard to believe that. I mean, you look back last year, you were part of a ceremonial puck drop in a full building with Norba Riddell, obviously, of True North Sports and Entertainment, Ben Lahovey, and Sammy Joe Small. What was that kind of experience like as someone that, I mean, you're on TV, so you're in the public eye, but you're kind of used to being the one that's interviewing the players, you know what I mean? For that moment, you and those other three incredible women are the focal point of 15,000 plus people.
So I, despite my career choice, do not actually feel particularly comfortable being the center of attention with things. I don't. And I always say to people that, you know, when it's you and a camera, as you can appreciate, whether it's two people watching you or there's 4.5 million people watch me when I'm on the Grey Cup, it's the exact same in that sense. So you don't think about, but to see, to be the center of attention, then to have all those people watching us made me a little bit comfortable. I opened up our broadcast and then I ran under the stands, and even just walking past, because especially a game where I'm hosting, I don't like to be the center of attention, because for me, it's about the players and it's about on ice. So I had to walk through the bench and the ovation that the Jets fans gave me. I was trying not to get choked up, and I was trying to play it, you know, somewhat cool while walking out of, okay, but yeah. Thank you. And not wanting to wave. How much do you wave? Do you wave too much? I don't know what to do with this right now. I feel all awkward with my hands. What do you do? And also, Mitch, beyond everything else, not going to lie, my big thing was, please don't fall. That's all, every step I took. Please don't fall. Please don't fall. because it's bad enough. It'd be bad enough if that happened before the present day social media. But now that's all I could envision mm-hmm. in my mind. But to get that reception and to be out with those wonderful women that have, you know, carved such tremendous paths in their own fields for them, that it was special. And I was so honored to have been asked. And then I said to have been able to get the reception that I did from fans there really meant a lot.
How did it feel to have your resume read out to 15,000 people by Jay Richardson just before you walked out?
Yeah, well, and you don't know what sort of response you're going to get. I mean, we've all watched the ceremonies before. And so what if there's a lot of people there that don't like me? What if there's boos? What if it's just silent? And it was great. And I wrote out, I gave some details about my career to True North beforehand, just in various events they covered. And I don't think that I do a good enough job sometimes of remembering the things that I have done and that I've had the opportunity to be a part of and cover and accomplish. And one of the benefits of being forced to provide almost that resume of it is that it allows you to take stock a little bit of the things that you've done. And it was great.
Final question for you. I think we can all agree that we're hoping for the vaccination process to go smoothly, and perhaps the day comes soon that fans are back in the building and reporters are allowed to go back into dressing rooms. In the category of you don't know what you have until it's gone, how much are you looking forward to that possibility?
All of it. I'm looking forward to it being a deafening arenas that we go into with fans that are, you know, in Winnipeg that are so loud that I swear I've lost hearing in both ears because I have to turn up. So I wear a double earpiece so that I can hear the truck communicating with me, and my IFB, I have to continually turn it up louder and louder because to try to overcome the noise of the fans. But I can't wait for that to happen because that adrenaline rush that it gives you is second to none. And the opportunity to be able to go back into the dressing room, I'm looking forward to, because it gives you a totally different feel and sense of what's going on. Plus, you just have the chance to have little conversations with, whether it be players or staff. And there's that sense of community that you aren't able to get over Zoom. So I'm sure that players have enjoyed not having us in there, but I look forward to having to go and stand in front of their stall and stick the microphone in their face and talk to them again. And here's fingers are crossed that it's able to happen sometime soon.
I'm sure secretly they can't wait either.
They just don't want to admit it, Mitch. You know that they like standing and talking to us. Some of them maybe more than others, but
it's what I'm telling myself anyway.
That's right. You and me both. I'm going to walk in there with a big smile and say, I know you guys are just so happy to see us.
Sarah, thanks so much for this. I know you're busy. So I appreciate you taking the time to join us on Ground Control, the official podcast of the Winnipeg Jets.
Always love it. Anytime, Mitch.
Shop where the players shop. Jets Gear and TrueNorthShop.com are your authentic team stores. Make sure to stock up on all your favorite Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose merchandise today. Visit one of the 5 Jets Gear locations or shop online at TrueNorthShop.com.
Thanks so much to Sarah for taking the time. Always good to hear from her. Moving on, the week ahead. The Winnipeg Jets have 2 home games here. Like we mentioned earlier, a quick pit stop against the Montreal Canadiens on Monday and Wednesday. And then immediately after the game on Wednesday, they fly to Edmonton for a Thursday night tilt with the Oilers, and then have the day in between, and then they finish the week off on Saturday night in Edmonton. So, Mitchell, just looking ahead this week, Montreal, they lost Ben Chiarot earlier last week in a fight, so they're missing him, but I believe they're coming off a loss in Calgary. Just what's the week looking like for the Winnipeg Jets? Obviously, we're getting that really strange back-to-back home road situation that, you know, has not been a thing here in Winnipeg very often.
Yeah, I've been on a couple of those, and it's really weird. Like you're used to going from like visiting rink to another visiting rink for back to back, but it seems so much more odd when you're doing it from your own rink and going somewhere else. So that'll be a bit of an adjustment. At least the way that I kind of see it, anyways, is the time zone may help a little bit because you're going west. So you're going to be gaining an hour instead of, say, trying to go east and losing an hour and whatnot. But even still, that's going to be a late night. So a tough turnaround for the Jets. You mentioned the 2 games against Montreal. I think there's going to be a little bit of added motivation for the Jets in that one, given the way the last matchup between the 2 teams went. The Jets are going to want to kind of level that off. And then it's really going to be interesting, this monster road trip. You got 2 against Edmonton. A team that obviously, you know, brings a whole bunch of speed and skill to the table. They had a tough loss to the Vancouver Canucks on Saturday night. But we're really pressing. It's just Vancouver blocked absolutely everything in the last couple of minutes. So obviously Edmonton presents a unique challenge. Maurice has always been complimentary of the structure that Vancouver can play with. So that's another team that you're going to see on this road trip for a couple. So that's going to be a challenge. A lot of the games against the Canucks have been pretty tight. You know, some of the scores may not indicate it, but it's always been a play here or there that's kind of turned it open. And then you have the Flames, who obviously, you know, a new head coach for them. You're going to have 3 straight against Calgary, and they're a team that can grind, and it's tough to get some open ice. So you're going to see, I don't know if you could say 3 different styles of game, because the Jets kind of want to play their game every time they get out there. But ideally the other team's going to have something to say about that as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how they kind of react to that. Cause those are three teams that, you know, they've kind of caught a little bit of momentum the last little bit. Vancouver, the last time the Jets saw them, was really in tough. And then all of a sudden they've kind of been able to get a couple of positive results. The Edmonton Oilers, basically after the three game series against Toronto, went up against Ottawa and put up a bunch of numbers, and Connor McDavid all of a sudden is on fire again. So, and then the Flames have won a couple of games against the Montreal Canadiens. So this is going to be a tough road trip, a tough week that starts with the Montreal Canadiens. So, I mean, we seem to say it every week, but there's unique challenges that come with every week. And then of course, this will also finish off a stretch of 12 of 14 on the road for the Jets. So by the end of that 7-game road trip, they're going to be so happy to be home, I think.
Oh yeah, that is an understatement. Before we get to our next topic, just want to let our listeners know that this isn't the only podcast we make at the factory here. We have Flyby. It's a game day podcast, the official game day podcast of the Winnipeg Jets. Our good friend Jamie Thomas, who's on this podcast, and Paul Edmonds, who also makes his appearances as well. They preview each game right before the game. So around, what do you say, Jamie, about noon? We're going to try and get that up for?
Yeah, 12, 1 o'clock, depends on the mercy of social media, of course, but it should be up and running around there. But it's been interesting. It's like 6 or 7 minutes. I know there's a big gap in the radio world right now, so we're trying to fill some of that gap right now with some informative 6 or 7 minutes of podcasts on Flyby, the official game day podcast, the Winnipeg Jets. Happy to be part of the family now. Thank you.
Yes, and you can get that podcast on SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and we've submitted to a bunch of other places, and they're taking their sweet time. But just rest assured, it will be available on all podcasting platforms. And once we have them available, we'll create a central hub on our website so you can choose which one you want to listen to. All right, moving on. This gentleman was our guest a few weeks ago, Trevor Lewis. I believe it was Thursday. He played in his 700th NHL game. Obviously, a great accomplishment. The man is a 2-time Stanley Cup champion. Jamie, what has he brought to the Winnipeg Jets? I mean, he's quietly consistent. We don't hear from him much in the media, but man, he has done some good things.
Yeah, and I think him, along with Nate Thompson and Matthew Perreault, have finally given Paul Maurice that veteran fourth line. And Paul has consistently said over the years he needed that fourth line. Mark Letestu was supposed to be that fourth line center a year ago. He got hurt, and that kind of fell through the wayside. But now Paul has this line that he can throw out in any situation and not have to worry about it. The one thing he's pointed out to us is when you have three veteran players on your fourth line, is you don't have to worry about those guys not knowing who's on the ice. A younger player will not be aware of who's on the ice against them, or a veteran player will have that. And Trevor Lewis, along with his speed, and still has that knack for getting to the front of the net. There's just so many variables that he brings to that line. They were out against the Austin Matthews line, and you didn't see Paul Maurice rushing to get him off the ice against the Toronto Maple Leafs last week. So, and then you have an excellent penalty killer in Trevor Lewis. So I just think another guy in the room, another veteran in the room, and you can't put a price tag on guys who have won a Stanley Cup before, especially in a room full of players that just haven't had that experience yet. So another immeasurable tactic that you have with Trevor Lewis, and he's an important part of what Paul Maurice is doing now, especially again, a compressed schedule, the fact that he can roll four lines and on 5-on-5, he's been very important this year.
Mitch, we'll leave it to you to wrap things up. Just a quick thought on Logan Stanley, who replaced Nathan Beaulieu in the lineup after he went down with an injury in the first game against Toronto.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if Logan Stanley is the guy that kind of continues to get in. I mean, big shout out to him for playing 11 minutes on Thursday. It was his first game since February 13th, so almost a month. Thought he was solid. Josh Morrissey was complimentary of his game as well. Then Saturday, he follows it up with 12:45 and gets his first NHL point on a secondary assist. So nice for him to get that out of the way, especially in his home province, to get that first point. But obviously a real good showing stepping in into some tough circumstances. Not easy to jump in after missing a few games, let alone a month. So a big shout out to Logan Stanley for that and his first NHL point.
All right, fellas, go enjoy your Sunday as we record this. And for the rest of you listening, enjoy your week, and go Jets go. Thanks, everyone.
This is Big Ground Control, the official podcast of the Winnipeg Jets, hosted by Jets TV. For Jets news, videos, and more, head to WinnipegJets.com.